Spring is in the air, and I've been thinking about getting in my backyard and getting my hands dirty. But what plants should I be adding to my landscape, and which ones should I avoid? Today on CityCast Las Vegas, my guest is Nestor Robles, a local science teacher who runs a native plant nursery and has completely decolonized his backyard. And if you're wondering what it means to decolonize your backyard and why it matters, you're about to find out. It's Tuesday, March 12th. I'm Sarah Lohman, and this is what Las Vegas is talking about. So, you know, I just moved into this home in June, and so I just started this process. So I'm curious, what did your yard look like when you moved into your home compared to what it looks like now?
Good question, because a lot of people might move into their house and they look at their yard and they think there's already native plants living there.
Hmm.
But funny enough, they're actually most likely invasives. So my garden was a pile of dirt and a bunch of Bermuda grass, which is highly invasive, and maybe some invasive mallow weeds. And I knew what they were in, because in my household, we speak Spanish. So we called the Bermuda grass grama. So it's basically like the invasive term in Spanish. And I thought it was native, and it didn't take me years till I researched it myself. And I learned that it's a North African grass. So that's what my garden had in the beginning. And then slowly, I started making adjustments. So after four consecutive, I call it full seasons of native plants, it is a flower utopia, if you want to call it that. All kinds of native flowers that are everything from annuals to perennials, shrubs. A lot of stuff is temporary. So every month will look different. And that's the beauty of native plants, especially in the Mojave Desert, is that you can't show someone your native garden in July and expect them to be pleased with it, because it just doesn't hold up to our beauty standards that we have been conditioned to.
So when you walk through your backyard now, like, what do you see, like, the end of March or April?
So my vision as to what I see and, like, what I predict in the garden would be a lot of native poppies, some desert sunflowers getting bigger, maybe about 5-6 inches in that time period. Phacelia natives, we're talking about, you know, the early spring, basically. So a lot of those annuals will be popping up. Some of them will be blooming. But let's talk about flowers, because flowers are, they make everyone excited. With as far as flowers, let's see, what flowers would you see? You'll definitely see some globe mallow flowers, because they bloom almost all year. They really don't care about the freezes.
Are those the ones that are like that kind of pinky salmon color?
Yes.
I love those.
Yes. Some of them are pink salmon. Some of them are this beautiful, like, creamy orange. Mm. That's the globe mallow. So they will bloom pretty fast. Brittle bush. I'm missing brittle bush. Brittle bush is a very early bloomer. They even start in February. And in fact, last year we had so much rain in the summertime that they started blooming since November, which is crazy.
And those have little yellow flowers, right?
Yeah, those are the small yellow flowers that are...
And the leaves smell good too, like almost like a sage?
They have a sap, actually. So they have the brittle bush has a sap that will extrude from the base of the plant. That one will smell good. Mm-hmm. But the leaves don't have a strong odor.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. I mean, maybe along with that is, you know, what does it mean to decolonize our backyards?
So decolonizing in general it's a big topic, and it can be a heavy topic for people, especially if they're new. In terms of decolonizing your backyard, obviously we're talking about adding native plants, right? That's the obvious part. But it doesn't stop there. Half of it is also the practices that you use. So when you decolonize your yard, you are most likely you're cleaning it less. You're being less picky about what grows. You're letting nature kind of take its natural course. You're letting things die, which is something people really have a hard time with, especially my mom. She's a middle-aged Mexican woman that loves lush green plants, right? And a lot of us are like that. A lot of us have been conditioned into having that mentality. But as far as practices, so I don't sound very vague, leaving the litter on the floor, like the organic, the leaf litter, your plants don't have to be super trimmed and neat all the time, because a lot of times they'll be habitat for like native bees. Mm. And so a lot of that will naturally become a mulch in your yard. And that is habitat for bees. I've even seen birds nest in that in the middle of the city, which is amazing. And what else? Everyone loves butterflies, right? But yeah. No one wants to put in the work into actually raising them or making that habitat available for them. And that's a big thing where trimming is a big no-no, because you're going to trim a host plant, right, that can potentially be having baby caterpillars. You'll trim the plant and then they'll die. They'll simply fall down with the broken twigs that you cut off.
So it's about planting certain plants in your backyard, but then also just letting them go its natural course, leaving the litter on the ground for bee habitat, leaving dead sticks and things for caterpillar habitat and mm-hmm. eggling habitat too. So I think that's some of the environmental impact of planting the native plants. Is there a cultural significance to decolonizing your backyard as well?
Oh yeah, of course. So with native plants, nowadays it's more common, right? Because you see more people growing natives. But we are in Southern Paiute land. We have to realize that these plants have had a connection with the people. The plants have a story. And not only do we have to acknowledge the land, right, but we have to also kind of become mini activists and land defenders with our own backyards. Mm-hmm. Because with all the urbanization, with all of the developments happening in the middle of in our city and on the outskirts, it's almost like you're raising awareness that, yes, we are in stolen land, and it's not enough to just address that. We have to start educating ourselves so that one day we can strive for a better city that can respect the land more.
Did you say land defender? Is that the term?
Land defender, yes.
I love that. And I love the idea that I can be an activist in my own backyard too.
Yeah, and that's what it really comes down to, because colonization is really, it started psychologically, and it will continue psychologically until we stop it from our inside out, right? Mm-hmm. Everything in modern colonialism, right, everything has to have some kind of value to it, including the plants that people grow. It's kind of that question, like, well, why are you growing that? What is it going to give you? Are you going to eat it? Is it going to give you shade, or is it just going to be really pretty? And stepping away from that and getting into native plants, it's awkward at first, because I've been judged by community members, by my neighbors.
For how your yard looks, that kind
yes,
of thing.
Yeah. For growing natives. Yeah, yeah. Isn't that wild? Yeah. I'll have random family over and they'll look at my garden and be like, what is that for? Like, are you growing carrots? I'm like, no, they're poppies. Okay, they kind of look like carrots, but they're wildflowers. So instead of really wanting everything to do something for you, we have to also realize that we have to do something for the land.
I mean, I'm already getting some of the sort of battling against what a backyard should look like in big air quotes. I'm in like an ongoing fight with, I'm in a rental unit, so with the landscapers who will just come and mow everything indiscriminately. And especially when you're first starting, you know, these plants don't look like much. They're just babies.
That's true.
And exactly. So they get mown down with everything else. So I'm doing my best to sort of guard them and protect them. Because I really do like those rhythms of how they grow throughout the year. And I remember you mentioned, I think on your Instagram, that you only watered your yard twice last summer.
It involves a little bit of research, because you need to know what kind of natives would grow. A lot of people, including myself, I spent a lot of time just randomly putting natives in the soil and having little success. So you really need to know how much sunlight you have, how much, if you have like really hard soil, if it's really sandy, and then you can narrow it down and choose the native seeds that are more compatible. But starting off with some basic species so that people can take away like actual concrete information from my blabbering.
Great.
The desert globe mallow will work anywhere. And it's super easy to start. Brittle bush, also the same. It'll grow anywhere, super easy. Water, it'll get huge. Same thing with globe mallow. So I think those are two very iconic species that are good starters for people.
Can I ask you, how did this all start for you? How did you get into native plants?
That is, I would say, culturally significant for me, now that you mention it. And thank you. Thank you, Sarah, because... I remember since I was a child, I had this fascination with monarchs for absolutely no reason. I had never seen one in my life. I had never gone to a state with a lot of monarchs passing through in their migration. And I just remember being very attracted to them. I would look them up on Google. I was that little nerd that would like check out 10 books about the same thing in elementary school. And then as I got older, I did research and I realized, oh, you know what? They live off of milkweed. So I'm going to grow some milkweed. It was literally my dream to see a monarch in my garden. It was like, for me, it would be like beyond. And that's exactly what I did. So I started with monarchs, that led to milkweed. That led to me looking into milkweed and realizing it was a native plant. And then after that, it was like a huge domino effect for me where I just started going to the Nevada Native Plant Society. And I've met some amazing people there that were very knowledgeable. A lot of my research was really just what led up to this moment, though, really, on my own time.
And when was the first time you saw a monarch in your garden?
The first time I saw a monarch was in 2021, I believe, in the summer. Mm. Yeah. It was nectaring off of my native milkweed. And I was like, mission accomplished. We did it.
That's awesome. I love them too. I grew up in Cleveland, Ohio, on the south shore of Lake Erie. And so when they're migrating south, they will gather on the south shore overnight because they get tired.
Oh, wow. That's
amazing. And so they gather in these big, big, big groupings, especially if the weather is bad.
Because my cousin lives in Chicago, she used to tell me that when she was a kid, now she's 35. As a kid, she could see like swarms of them, like fly through the city, huge flocks of monarchs. That is no longer the case. I have not heard of anyone witness that anymore due to their decline. But of course, we have like the fact that they cross the border, right?
Yeah.
Which is really cool. And they go from Mexico to the US and they can go back and forth and like, undocumented people where we're kind of just stuck where we're at. So it's a good reminder that, you know, that nature is free.
Yeah.
Nature is liberty. And at the end of the day, we are not bound by the human constructs and the borders. Like Mother Nature is just a free flowing system. It knows no borders in a good way and in a bad way, right? Because then we have like with pollution getting everywhere. But also the butterflies, they don't care. We'll just fly over the border wall.
Yeah, this is all their country. Monarchs don't care about an international border that arbitrarily says one place is another. This is their land. So why is it important for Las Vegans to be thinking about a native landscape?
So in the future, when we have even more unpredictable climate, it will save us a lot of water in the long run. And the desert right now is a golden opportunity to almost kind of like improve its health and fix it. Because the Mojave Desert and the area surrounding it, right, are deserts of the West. It is the last freestanding wilderness in the continental United States. If we were to continue our progress, right, quote unquote, our progress and develop more land the way that we're doing now, we could lose even more species and more plant species and make it even harder for these creatures to just survive.
Yeah.
So by pitching in our own backyard and being part of that whole picture where we all grow native plants, then we won't have to like pray to God one day that, oh, I hope I see a monarch, you know, because they'll be there. If we have their habitat, they'll be there and they'll come. We'll have the queen butterflies. We'll have the West Coast lady, the West Coast painted lady, which is another one of my favorites. And of course, you have the native bees too, which are in decline. So I think that's a smart idea, because we have to give and take, you know, as a society. And it's our way to give back.
Nestor, if people have questions about how to get started in their own backyards, can they reach out to you on your Instagram?
Yes, of course. I'm always taking DMs. You guys can ask me for seed availability, which ones you should grow, seeding processes and germination. And honestly, any inquiries are welcomed.
And you've already helped me a lot. So I have to admit, I threw a lot of seeds in there, but you did give me four types that were like specific. You thought to like, you know, a lot about the different soils in our valley too. So you've been able to give like really good recommendations of what could possibly grow in my area. So we'll put your Instagram in the show notes. And so anyone that wants to give this a shot is welcome to reach out to Nestor. Nestor, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thank you, Sarah. It was an honor to be here. I really appreciate the opportunity, and I hope that your native plants have a bright future.
That's all for today here on CityCast Las Vegas. If you enjoyed the show, why not tell a friend? Rate the show or leave us a review. We'll be back tomorrow morning with more news from around the city. Take care.
Like, native plants won't magically just grow because they're native. Mm. If we have a drought where we won't have anything. So then you start realizing, oh, crap, our climate is so important. And then that also drags you into the whole, like, starting to know about droughts. Like, and then you're going to be crazy like me and write down every time it rains. That way you can look back and see, like, okay, my plants have been drinking this month. Maybe I don't have to water them as much.